Please lower your head and watch your step while boarding.
Welcome to the Attractions Podcast. You are all clear for dispatch. Have fun.
Hello and welcome to episode 68 of the Attractions Podcast, the very first episode for 2021. I am Seth Kaberski, your co-host, and my usual co-host, Brittany Tuttle, is not available to be with us this evening. We all send our heart out to Brittany. She'll be back with us soon, but instead I have a very special guest co-host, the man who makes all of this possible, the founder and publisher of Attractions Magazine, Mr. Matt Roseboom. Oh my gosh, I almost called you Mr. Rat Moseboom. We're going to fix this. I'm sure Brittany can edit that out.
She better. Hi, everybody. How's it going? I'm trying to fill in for Brittany tonight, but we'll see how it goes.
You know, I know it's been a while since you have made an appearance on the podcast. Can you remind everyone just a little bit? We're 68 episodes into the podcast, but obviously Attractions has been around a lot longer than that. How did all of this start? How did we end up in 2021?
Wow, that's a long story. I'll try to make it short. yeah, we started in 2007 with a magazine, and wow. Before that, I have a history in newspaper. Owned some newspapers in Southwest Florida, but started the magazine, and then we added the website, and then we had the YouTube channel, and lots of things come and gone, and here we are. And Seth's been around with us for a long time, on and off. Before he was host of the podcast here, co-host, he's been writing for us for quite a while.
Yes, and I am really excited to be going into 2021 as the co-host of the podcast. I think I did well enough in 2020 that we didn't have any revolts. I see in our chat that someone was saying that they cannot see us. I can see you, and you can see me, and hopefully my wife is watching in the bedroom, and she'll text me if she can't see us. Please let us know in the chat if you have any other issues seeing us. But we are going to jump right into the very exciting sound clip for the first time this year. Hold your ears. It's News in the Queue. How was that?
That sounded good to me.
That's pretty good. So, you know, we're going to be a little unconventional this week. Normally, News in the Queue, we'd be talking about some news we posted. Honestly, a lot of the industry kind of took a nap in between Christmas and New Year's. Some of us did not get out of our pajamas for a solid week, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's nothing at all wrong with that.
What they call slow news week.
I want to just talk really briefly about what we each did for New Year's and for the holiday. So Matt, what have you been up to?
I have did about what you described, pretty much in my pajamas all week. For New Year's, we ordered Uber Eats and got some steaks. Didn't make it to midnight, ended up in bed way before midnight, but what do you know, we woke up and it was the next year, so we're good.
Congratulations, we made it. We made it across that finish. We made some stuff out of our freezer, and we live in one of those neighborhoods where we have pretty much 360-degree fireworks. Our neighbors just stock up, and it goes on for hours and hours. They were still burning some of them off tonight. Did not, for the first time in many a year, did not go anywhere near a theme park on New Year's Eve week.
Yeah, normally I would go probably walk around Epcot just to see all the parties that they're having in the different lands. It's something they do once a year, but this year, of course, they weren't doing it. And even with COVID this is the was the busiest week of the whole year. So
oh, absolutely,
it's a time that us locals try to stay away from the theme parks if we can.
You know, some of us have to take one for the team because we are reporting on the crowds. Yep. This year, I mostly reported them on them from afar, but I did take a trip over to Bay and Dockside Inn on day before New Year's Eve. They've reopened the Mandara Spa, and they gave it a really nice scrubbing. Everything looks really clean. They've got additional attendants making sure that everything is kept really sanitary while you're there. And the Biche Italian restaurant there is doing a 20% off everything on your check right now.
Nice.
If you go in between 5 and 9, that's I'm sorry, 5 and 7. It's like a happy hour special they're doing. But I actually I took the bus to Dockside and then I walked back from Dockside.
Oh wow.
Which is not that bad. It only took about 20-25 minutes.
Oh, really?
With some really bad long red lights. It's, you know, I wouldn't do it with a little kid in a stroller. But it's not as bad as I thought it would be. And Dockside Inn for a value hotel is absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah,
I would definitely recommend to stay there.
And one thing to know when you stay there, they don't recommend you walk to the parks or walk anywhere from there. They want you taking the buses. It's not really set up for you to walk.
Yeah,
they don't make it easy on you.
It's doable, and I had enough people ask me about it that I wanted to check it out. But 7 minutes for the bus to go either way. There's always a bus showing up. So, yeah, there's no reason whatsoever to walk. And I also, Brittany had a good idea that we should just really quickly talk about something that we are looking forward to in 2021. And obviously there's a lot of stuff.
I'm besides linked, vaccines.
Besides vaccines. I am looking forward to, to one, seeing more entertainment come back to the theme parks, especially Disney. And I am also looking forward to something that you recently previewed, I believe, that we have not talked about on the show yet, Deezerland. Deserland. Thank you. Thank you for giving me the correct pronunciation on that.
Just think of a desert, because it was like a desert before Deserland.
So I got to object to that. I was a big fan of Artigan. I might have been the only big fan of Artigan. and I've been a loyal visitor to that movie theater, the Cinemark there.
Yeah, it's a nice one.
When I used to go to movie theaters.
Yeah.
I'm kind of excited to see a brand new attraction, iDrive. I know they've had some previews, and you got a little taste of it, right?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. They opened it most of it earlier in December, and then just on January 1st, they finally opened the auto experience, which is a separate purchase, but there's no cost to just go in and walk around and look around. So they have a big arcade. You can go in and look at that. They got a huge indoor electric go-kart track. It's one of the largest in Florida, I know, maybe beyond. And then there's going to be a pinball museum coming. Playable pinball museum.
Excellent.
And then they have cars sitting around, and you don't have to pay to go see the car auto experience.
Oh, cool.
That's where the most of the cars are, but you can see a few of them sitting just all around the mall without paying.
Gotcha.
But if you're into cars, they have cars, bicycles, anything transportation, from movie cars just to old classic cars. And they're all grouped different areas. Like they took, I don't know if you remember the old bookstore that was down by the discount
bookstore,
yeah,
which I was a big fan of. I have shelves full of stuff from there.
But now it is the military part of the auto museum.
Okay.
So they got tanks in there and everything else that you can think of. But they've taken different storefronts and themed them differently. There's a James Bond a room, and then there's a superhero room, TV and movie room. There's lots of things to see.
Very cool. Well, it sounds like a great way to kill a rainy afternoon.
Yeah, definitely.
Looking forward to checking that out. What about you? What is something that you are looking forward to in 2021? Well, other than life getting back to normal. So.
Yeah. Well, the obvious things are the Ratatouille ride once that finally opens, and I'm absolutely just going to enjoy that whole area with the creperie and everything. After having those crepes at Universal with their stand, I'm ready for more crepes.
All right, we're going to have to arrange this crepe off. It's a crepe smackdown between the one in Universal
and there
the
one we go.
Coming to France and Epcot.
Yep.
Excellent. Well, I think that for our this week's main attraction, Brittany had a great idea of us looking at the top stories of 2020 on attractionsmagazine.com. And these are not necessarily her personal favorite or the editor's personal favorite. These are based on number of clicks, right? These are the most viewed articles on our website for 2020.
And we also, we're not going to talk about it, but separate from this, we have a top 10 videos that are on our YouTube channel as well.
Yes.
We have that absolutely in video form and on our website, so check that out. But right here are the top 10 stories, most read stories of the year. And as you can guess, a lot of them have to do with COVID and the effects of it, but we'll go through them here.
Yep, it'll be a recurring theme. So we start out with number 10, which was SeaWorld Orlando reopens with loose rules and limited rides. You know, SeaWorld reopened June 11th, and they had a lot of the same things that the other theme parks did, a lot of the same signage, the same social distancing rules. But, you know, we noticed, our reporters noticed enforcement of things like distancing and face masks were not quite at the same level that what we saw at Disney and Universal.
I was going to say, unfortunately, it's still that way. They've gotten a little better with it, but it's still out of the, you know, Universal, Disney, and SeaWorld in Orlando, that's the least mask important. Now, they have the same rules, like you said, but they just don't, I think they just don't have the staff to go around keeping people following the rules.
I think you're right. It's a combination of, you know, how many people there are enforcing the rules, you know, the priority they place on that enforcement, and also the mindset of the people coming into the park, whether, you know, what the crowd wants to do. Cause ultimately it's up to the public to follow the rules.
Right.
You can only have so much enforcement. People have to go along with it. Granted, I felt the same way. I went to, a media event at SeaWorld not long ago and didn't feel 100% safe about some stuff. But I will say it's still better than my grocery store.
Yeah, yeah.
Even the worst theme park here in Orlando is still probably better than the grocery store.
And they're checking temperatures, which isn't usually done at grocery stores, at least not around here.
Absolutely. So number 9, again, another pandemic news article. Disney has officially banned another type of face mask. And this was one of many articles discussing the great face mask controversy, which is, you know, obviously spread far further than just theme parks. This one in particular was when Disney clarified and they banned the use of neck gaiters, open triangle bandanas, face coverings containing valves, mesh materials, or holes of any kind. In the very early days, people were kind of pushing the limits of what was acceptable. I think one day the gaiters were okay at Disney, and then the next day they were not okay at Disney, but you could still wear them at Universal.
And you still can at Universal. Gaiters, at least, not the face mask with the valves. Those are banned both places. Mm-hmm. And then I think SeaWorld allows gaiters and valves. I'm not sure about the valves.
We invested in a set of masks with these holes that you could put straws up. That would be perfect for drinking around the world at Epcot until, you know, then the next day they got banned right after we received them. So that didn't work out so well. Do you have a personal favorite face mask variety?
My favorite is probably most comfortable one. Some ones I got at Uniqlo are really nice. They fit really well.
Oh, really?
I like those. And of course, I have Christmas ones and, you know, Darth Vader and Boba Fett and all those. But and I will say that they're still updating different things about COVID as they learn and adjust. And Disney's recently been adding plexiglass to more rides and.
Yes.
And changing rules on how many people can sit, you know, filling the complete coaster car instead of every other row. So they're continually adjusting.
And that could probably be a whole podcast episode. Most recently, I noticed that I rode Flight of Passage the other week, and they were filling every seat with no barriers in between. And I thought for sure as a single rider, I was going to get, some space on either side of me, but, nope.
Yeah, I don't like that, but that's, you know, to each their own, but I personally don't like that.
So, obviously, face masks, still going to remain a hot topic until they are no longer needed.
Yep.
Number 8 was a photo update from BioReconstruct. This one was from canceled and continued projects at Walt Disney World. But, some of our best photographic blog posts this year have come from Bio. And his aerial photography. I already had a lot of respect for what he does before I went up in a helicopter ride. But then we went up in one on the first day that the parks were all shut down.
Yeah.
That's, you know, just being a passenger is a little hair-raising. And trying to take good, steady photographs in that situation, that takes nerves of steel. So my hat is off and blown out the window and flown somewhere over iDrive to Bio.
Yeah, we've been working with Bio for a long time. He's been contributing to us for I don't know how many years now, probably 10. Just in recent years, he's taken to the skies a lot and become the Twitter reporter for aerial photography around Orlando and California sometimes.
Yeah, amazing work. And I wanted to pay him from the Orlando Weekly at one point to buy some pictures from him, and he refused because he didn't want to have to reveal his name to put it on a check. Didn't want anyone to uncover his identity. So
same for us.
He's amazing anonymous photographer.
Yeah, he contributed to us years ago before he was doing the Twitter updates, he would just send us photos directly, and we offered to pay, and he didn't want them. So,
how does he get Walt Disney World federally protected airspace? I believe the FAA restrictions over Walt Disney World are very specific corridors. It's not blanket over the whole property.
It's basically only over Magic Kingdom, and it's only to a certain height. And even then, you can get permission if you're flying. Your pilot can call in, "Hey, we're flying over. Photographer, can we get a one run over?" And they'll say, "Yeah, sure."
So, Bio knows people.
Yeah.
by now they can feel him coming. Number 7, Universal Orlando City Walk planning to partially reopen on May 11th, and this was the beginning of the reopenings, right? Because Universal Orlando City Walk was the first. Here in Orlando, the first theme park complex to reopen, and Disney kind of followed in their footsteps. So obviously this was a really big story. Were you there on that first day that City Walk reopened, or that first few days?
I know it wasn't within the first few days. I'm not sure if I was there in the very first day. You can see we put a couple updates there where they they changed the dates on it. But both Universal and Disney, they started with, you know, Disney started with Disney Springs and Universal started with City Walk and select locations. Mostly the restaurants were, you know, for takeout only or eat outside when they first opened.
Yeah, I can remember that first day. It was eerie. A lot of people who were just happy to be around other people, but at the same time very nervous and cautious about it. And the huge amount of staff, people, one, cleaning everywhere, everything constantly, and then also so many people just thanking people for coming back. There wasn't a lot to do that first day. There weren't very many. Margaritaville was about the only restaurant that was open, and it like instantly had about 2 or 3 hour wait. Just instantly.
Yeah, that was actually the first restaurant we ate at outside of our house when we sat outside there by the seaplane that sits across from Margaritaville and ate out there.
But it was definitely memorable because it was, you know, the first thing really to reopen at any of the resorts. So,
yep.
Number six, I believe this is one that I might have written. Frequently asked questions about Star Wars Rise of the Resistance. This is a little FAQ that we put together about the number one ride at Disney's Hollywood Studios, which is by far the most difficult attraction to ride in Orlando. I think hands down. There are the ratio of people who want to ride it versus the ratio of people who actually get on it every day.
Yeah.
There's nothing else that compares. There's no other ride that you have to read a fact about to figure out how you can ride it.
Yeah. You know? Get in line.
Yeah.
But we wrote this before the pandemic. Some of it's not exactly the same anymore, but
yeah, I think this probably might need an update.
Either update it or link it to another, you know, here's during pandemic how you ride Rise of the Resistance.
Right.
But it didn't change a whole lot, and you still have to get reservations. They just change the times of when you're able to do it and where you have to be to do it.
Yeah, so the big difference is in the early days, basically at the very beginning, you could get it as soon as you walked in the park. And that didn't last long at all because people were showing up at like 4 a.m. And then they made it so the second the park opened for the day, that's when they all were distributed. And so you'd have this thing with all these people who you know, showed up super early and it's 7 a.m. and they're all standing around in the hub, you know, in front of the Chinese theater. And you hear this giant collective groan slash cheer.
Yep.
Like right, you know, because these things go within seconds.
Yep.
They just didn't, there's nothing else like this in a theme park where like within seconds, you know, whether you're going to get to ride this big thing or not. But the big change now is that instead of having to be inside the park at that magic, which is right now 7 a.m., you can do it from the comfort of your bed. So how do you feel about that?
That's a good change, but it brings up other things. There's people just picking park passes for that park just to try and do that the next morning. And do they go in and cancel their park passes when they don't get it? I don't know. Yeah.
No, so. I don't think that they do at all.
Yeah.
I know I am guilty of doing that once, of going back to after not getting it, and just being like, heck with it. Forget it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's nice in that you don't have to get up and be there, and it avoids the crowds, and that's the main reason they did it, because people would just be lined up before the park even opens, you know.
Yeah. No, really. I will say that with the old system, I was about 50-50 with being able to get a boarding pass. Since they did it from home, I am batting zero.
Yeah,
I have not gotten on once.
That's the bad part. Is I've had some friends come in from out of town recently. A mutual friend of ours actually, and Greg, and he couldn't get it. They couldn't ride. You know, he was here for a few days. Tried. I think he tried once or twice, and just didn't get it. And too bad. You can't ride it. You know.
Yeah. I mean, if capacity really is this restricted. My preference would be that when you make your park pass reservation, it tells you right then and there, you know, put you do a lottery style thing.
Mm-hmm.
And right when you get your park pass, know whether you're able to ride or not.
Yeah, that's similar to what they do in at Tokyo Disneyland.
Yeah,
they have a machine
shows,
you go up to, and you stick your card in this machine, and it kind of it's almost like a slot machine. Oh, yeah. You didn't win. You don't get to see this show today. So.
Yeah. The anxiety of waking up at 7 a.m. to, you know, mash exactly on the dot and still be told that it's gone.
Yeah,
that's not very magical.
Yeah, nope.
We are going to move on to number five, halfway through our list. Here's an interesting one. What makes a princess a Disney princess? So once the merger between the Disney and the Fox Corporation was complete, we had to figure out who an official Disney princess is. Now, there are 12 official princesses in the Disney princess lineup. Matt, I am all by heart. You do not need to look at the list that's on the screen. Basically, they are in one breath.
Thank you.
Snow White, Cinderella, Aurora, Ariel, Belle, Jasmine, Pocahontas, Mulan, Tiana, Rapunzel, Merida, Moana. Is Belle really a prince? I guess she gets married, but I don't
that's
know about
whole,
that. That's a technicality.
That's a whole other thing. People say, you know, how is
Anna, Queen Elsa, and Princess Elena of Avalor are royalty in their films and television show, respectively, but are not currently included in the official Disney princess lineup.
I think his story's
a
little older.
Might have to
older.
Be a recount or a lawsuit
that
sure. might have changed.
Yeah, I'm not sure when this story was written. I think it's an older story, isn't it? What? Well, it's got to be since they bought Fox, but.
But I believe the thrust of this article was that just because Fox had merged with Disney, did not necessarily mean that the xenomorph alien queen from the Aliens films or. Neytiri from Avatar
right.
Were instantly Disney princesses. I'm personally in favor of Dr. Frankenfurter from the Rocky Horror Show being declared an official Disney queen, but no one else seems to be jumping on board that one. So,
yep.
Hey, this was number five of all the things that happened.
Yeah.
That was number five.
People
most
were
clicked.
Interested.
Number four, Orlando theme parks share an update for coronavirus.
Yeah, I don't know that we had to need seen to talk too much about this one just because it was
yeah.
just another update. It was, you know, people right when the parks closed and people were interested, when they're going to open, you know, how long they're going to be closed.
Right. And this particular one, was in that really weird time right at the beginning of March where international parks were all closed. And, you know, the Disney and Universal, you know, they were not yet closed, but they're like, oh, well, we think we'll be okay. And then when they first close, it'll just be 2 weeks. So... it's kind of like a weird time capsule to read some of these statements from.
Oh, are you
talking about how things are under control? We've got extra hand sanitizers in the park, and we think that'll take care of everything.
Yeah,
so,
right.
Yeah. Interesting what people thought in early March.
Now, yeah, it's interesting to go back and read some of the stories, and it will be interesting for years to go back and follow the whole process.
If early 2020 Seth knew what Gen 2021 Seth knows, he would just crawl into bed probably and not come back out.
Exactly.
Number three, again, coronavirus, theme park, attractions, closings, and updates. And this was one that we kind of kept updated throughout.
Right.
It was kind of a catch-all listing all the details of what was closed, what was opening, and was this was kind of freaky to watch this go from all these things are opening to all these things might be closing to everything's shut down. If you refreshed this particular article.
Yeah, that was just a kind of a running, like you say, we just kept adding to it. If something changed, we added to it. Eventually we stopped because everything closed and then everything opened back up here in pretty much in Orlando and Florida.
Yep.
But
it's reopened, but it's not quite the same as it was.
Yep.
So we're coming in on number two, and this kind of shows the huge rebound. We go from everything is shut down, everything's closed, to Universal Orlando offering buy a day, visit all year tickets for Florida residents. And I think we can see the effect of this ticket right here in the attendance that Universal has had over the last month. Obviously, this had some blackouts in the last week or so, so you can't be totally blamed. But Universal, I mean, like throughout December, was hitting capacity on a regular basis. And I think that kind of brings up an interesting topic. Universal and Disney went two completely different directions when it came to attendance. Disney used their park pass system to make sure people did not come anywhere near their parks to keep them from getting too crowded. Universal, on the other hand, basically would sell anyone a ticket. They did even have date-specific tickets, but obviously that didn't really mean much.
Yeah.
Because they've had multiple days. They had days where they closed down before they even officially opened. I guess so many people showed up during early entry that...
Yeah, we had an article earlier this week about how they closed down and actually had a family write to us, and they had specific tickets, and they drove down from wherever and 1,000 miles, and here they are, they can't get in the park and are having trouble getting
Universal. Sorry, kids, the woodpecker at the front should have told you.
Right, exactly. It's sad when that happens, but and the only way they could avoid it was to do what Disney's doing and did the reservation system.
Right.
But
and the question is, because I found it surprisingly easy. I got park pass reservations at Disney parks on the week between Christmas and New Year's, which shocked me.
Yeah.
Did Disney leave money on the table? If we've got the parks have taken this huge hit, we look at their earnings reports, they've had this huge crash in their income this year. Was Universal smart to take every dollar that they could, because it looks like they had enough people waiting in line for food and drink stands, not to mention the rides, that they must have been at least making a little bit of money back.
Yeah, our reporter Brooke and her family was in town this past week at Disney every day, and like Woody's lunchbox in Toy Story Land, even if you use mobile order, which is the only way to order now, was hours long wait until you could get your food.
Wow.
And it was just crazy.
I will say I visited Avatar Land. I know that's not Pandora, the world of Avatar. Right after Christmas, and I was able to use the mobile order at Satuli Canteen.
Oh, nice.
Best quick service in the park, in my opinion. With boom.
Nice.
I hit order as I was stepping off of Flight of Passage, and I had my bowl ready for me. I think it's hit or miss depending on the particular location. We have a question here in the chat. What percentage of maximum capacity are Orlando theme parks limited to? So this is like the $1 million question.
Yeah.
I don't believe they are limited to anything now. I think that Governor DeSantis has lifted all restrictions, so they are limiting themselves.
But right.
The government is not restricting them. I think Disney has said that they are at 35% capacity.
It's 25 or 35, and I think Universal is. I don't think any of them have. I don't know if Universal said exactly, but I think they said between 25 and 35.
Yeah, I actually think that Universal. My gut feeling is that they are now closer to 50%.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the crowds, that's what you would think. And then there's also, you got to consider, is it 25% of what their maximum capacity is if that park is full, or is it 25% of what they usually would get on that date?
Exactly. And so my understanding is, at least with Disney, Disney talked about in a shareholder meeting that they were hitting 35%, targeting 35% capacity. And that was 35% of their maximum capacity. Their average daily capacity is actually only 50% of their maximum capacity. So if you look at something like the Magic Kingdom, where, you know, a maximum peak holiday, you could get 90 or almost 100,000 people in the park.
Right.
Your average daily capacity is really closer to 50%. And, or I'm sorry, 50,000 people.
Right.
And so you're looking at 35% of 100,000, which is, you know, 35,000. Still getting crowded, but still less than what you would have on an average day.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know through touring plans, we monitor wait times. And Disney has, one, been really inflating their wait times. You know, they will post, for every hour that they post, you're probably only waiting 40 to 45 minutes. And even taking that into consideration, wait times were really not bad, historically speaking, for Christmas week. You know, normally something like a Tower of Terror or a Space Mountain, you would normally see 2 hour waits for in Christmas week. And you weren't hitting quite those actors even with social distancing.
Yeah. And then parks like Epcot can hold even more people. So their 35% is 45 or 50,000 people versus Magic Kingdom's.
And what you have to understand is there's a big difference between the physical capacity of how many people there are space, you know, there's space for people to stand.
Right.
And riding capacity, in which how many attractions you have for people. You have to have something for people to do. It's not enough for them to just be standing out on the promenade. You have to have, you know, be able to keep people moving through queues, whether that's food queues or ride queues. So something like Epcot, you know, on, you know, look at a New Year's Eve, without all the entertainment that they would normally have, they just can't absorb as many people as they normally would.
Right. And then you were talking about the length of the lines, and I know in my head that they're socially distanced out, so I know that they're longer because of that. But but man, when you see a line that goes for Toy Story Land for the coaster there, and it goes clear out of the whole land and around the corner and down the street, it's like,
oh sure,
it's just
psychologically, absolutely. I would rather wait in a longer line that's continuously moving than a shorter line that stops still. Waiting this last time for Flight of Passage, the line started well outside the ride and like went towards the bridge to Africa and wrapped back and had a switch. You know, they had to navigate traffic and everything.
Right.
And even with all of that, I was through in less than an hour, and I never stopped moving the whole time.
Cool.
So I don't know. There's some, when this is all over, I don't want to go back to having people squeezed right up against me in a queue anymore. I want them to take a big step backwards. But that'll be a discussion for another time when all of this is done. So we are coming now up to our number one most clicked story of the year, and it was, we wore a mask all day in the hot sun at a theme park. Here's our experience and advice. And this was obviously, if there's ever a clickbait, we do not do clickbait, but if there is a clickbait title, that one's it. Because, you know, this is obviously a lot of people before the theme parks reopened, and when we were all anticipating, people were saying, how are people going to be able to wear a mask all day? How are people going to survive? Are people going to be passing out? Is it dangerous for you to wear a mask in hot Orlando? So we've both done it many times.
Right.
We both spent many full days. And we are still here. I'm still alive. But this article was, you know, kind of early on when people were debating the question. You know, I believe you are anonymously referred to here as our 50-year-old publisher.
yep.
And you testified that you had no problems.
Right.
I don't love it. It's annoying. It's the worst part of it is for 3D rides, especially. The glasses fog up something terrible. That's probably the worst part about it.
The only good time is when it's been cold out a little bit recently. Then it's not too bad.
That's what I was just gonna say. As bad as they were this summer, they've kind of been nice during the winter.
Yep.
There's going to be a time when you're not going to be required to wear the masks in the parks anymore, but I'm probably going to keep mine for a little while longer, you know, after it's not mandatory, but still a good idea. I'll probably keep wearing it for a while longer.
Yeah. As you know, people in Asia have been wearing masks for years. Whether it's a smog or just because they're sick and they don't, you know, being nice to protect themselves from other people. I was looking at some of our old videos from about 4 or 5 years ago and when we went visited Japan, and I was surprised how many people were wearing the masks back then.
Yeah.
And I think that's the way it's going to be here. And once we don't have to wear masks, I think a lot more people are going to do it. They're not going to feel silly about it. They're going to be, you know, and hopefully anybody sick, they're going to put it on for themselves to protect themselves from other people.
You know, I will say, whether it's wearing masks or just not going out, I have not had my usual colds this winter.
Yeah, I haven't been sick.
Yeah. Normally I get knocked out by a good cold or flu at least once a year. So, Max. Mark says we started wearing both the surgical mask and the fabric mask for extra protection. Not as high, absolutely. The last few days when it was really cold, I was really happy to wear a face mask. It was nice.
Yeah, and I too. Depending on the mask, if I feel it's thin, I'll put a filter. We bought some extra filters, and we'll stick them inside the mask and tape them in there, or you know, whatever we need to do to be a little bit more protective with it.
Smart. All right. So just to wrap up here, four news articles that Brittany pulled out, and they weren't on our list of the most popular ones, but I like the ones that she picked because, one, they're not COVID. They're not about things canceling or bad things happening. They're four positive articles. They're about things that are actually happening, either things to look forward to or things that actually opened. And I think they're kind of nice because they're kind of representative of, you know, as bad as 2020 was, the world is still spinning, still moving forward. You know, we're in a new year, and here's four positive stories that we can look back on that happened in 2020. I think the first one here is going to be the Rose Gold 50th anniversary update for Cinderella Castle at Magic Kingdom. This is something that was announced before the pandemic shut the parks down back in February. And when the parks reopened, we got a look at this new color scheme for the icon of the Magic Kingdom, which is going to be celebrating its 50th anniversary very soon. We might not get everything that we had originally hoped for the big 50th, but this was a very welcome a refresh. You know, the castle has had a lot of different looks over the years. Some of them have been very controversial.
Yep.
those of us who are old enough to remember the birthday cake from the 25th, this, I think, is much more tasteful and subtle. You know, in some of the pictures at first, people weren't quite sure about the color scheme, but I think it looks great in person. And what about you, Matt?
I like it. I think it's taken a little while to grow on me. Yeah. At first you come in and go, wait, what? But it's grown on me and it looks good. I don't think, you couldn't say it looks ugly. It looks nice. And then they've also gone and used the same color scheme on some of the entrance signs to Disney World as well.
Yes, they are giving the gateways, the arches, that you should definitely not pull your car over to pose for a photo with. It's all a refresh using the same color scheme, and they're going to all the official logo, the most magical place on Earth, because Disneyland is the happiest place on Earth.
I don't know if it is right now, but it will be.
Well, hopefully someday soon. So that was one of our four stories. Our next one is another castle story, and it was Hong Kong Disneyland unveiling their new Castle of Magical Dreams. Mm-hmm. And this was kind of a mind blower when they announced it. Hong Kong Disneyland opened with this quaint little castle that was an exact copy of the original in Disneyland. And then they just went crazy with their Lego set and built a Princess Dream Castle stacked on top of the original castle that is 13 stories, inspired by 13 stories of Disney princesses and queens, with many different towers and spires in different patterns and textures unique to each princess. It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's definitely a lot. But it does represent, the Disney company not giving up on Hong Kong Disneyland. It kind of felt like they put all of their heart and all of their investment into Shanghai Disneyland, and Hong Kong was sort of left by the wayside. Don't count Hong Kong Disneyland out, because they've got a beautiful new castle. They've had a rough year even before the pandemic with political protests shutting them down.
They've closed and opened a few times, and of course none of us have been able to see it in person yet, but from the photos it looks nice. And and when you say it, they put it on top of the other castle, it pretty much covers up the old castle.
You can kind of see in the center, if you took side by side with a picture of the Disneyland castle, you can sort of see that the bottom level and the very first level of towers matches, the original. And then everything on top of it has just been, plopped right on. I think Brittany and I had a conversation about this one. And I think it would look much better in person, especially if I am not personally paying out of pocket for the trip there to see it. I think in that case, I would think it was beautiful. but hopefully this is a symbol, a metaphor for Hong Kong Disneyland having better days.
And as publisher, I have to say, that's just joking. We don't say we like things just because they're free.
No, absolutely not. That was me being extremely sarcastic. Our second to last story will be Universal Orlando sharing full details for the Jurassic World Velocicoaster. This was big news because Universal actually admitted that something was being built. we kind of joke that Disney will give us all the concept art and announce everything 10 years before they start building it. Universal, on the other hand, will have the thing pretty much finished and ready to go and still be insisting, what, there's nothing over there. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
This was very eagerly anticipated, and I think you know, there's a lot of candidates for what's going to be the biggest new attraction to open in 2021. I think this one's going to be high on the list.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, the official announcement that sometime in the summer of 2021, Islands of Adventure will be home to the Jurassic World Velocicoaster.
People are already itching to get on it. I was there the other day and I heard some people say, how do we ride that black coaster? Where do we go to get onto that one?
Well, you get in that time machine DeLorean that they've got at the other park and set it forward.
Yep.
It's almost teasing us to set a opening date of summer 2021, maybe 6 months away, and run test runs in full view of the public on a regular basis. This thing, I'm sure there's something to do. There's still work to do in the queue. There's testing and adjusting. But they're running these trains on an almost daily basis. And it looks smooth. It looks fast. It looks intense. It looks like everything that you could want in a thrilling themed coaster. It's definitely going to be more of a grown-up coaster than Hagrid's is. Hagrid's is a great family-friendly coaster. I think this is going to really kind of compete with Hulk and Rip Ride Rocket for intensity. But it's got a lot more theme than, you know, you look at this next to Icebreaker, which is going to be opening at SeaWorld. Mm-hmm. And obviously there's a lot more detail and theming and story going on in this.
Yeah. And a longer ride. I think SeaWorld kind of up and back. And
This is almost like two rides in one, because you've got all these little tight hairpin turns in and around the rock work with the dinosaur figures. And then you go on this big launch out over the water with, zero G stalls and invert. And I think this one... if nothing else, it will make it easier to ride Hagrid's, because everyone's going to be waiting in line for this one. That's what I'm hoping.
That's true. There's a good point, too.
Finally, this was Brittany's pick as the biggest story of the year. I kind of got to agree that we got an opening date, and people have set foot before the year ended. At the end here, people were previewing inside Super Nintendo World. Boy, we're gonna have to edit that one. Yes, full official details and photos were released for Super Nintendo World, officially opening February 4th, and already with guests having previewed inside of it. And they have banned all photography and video. It hasn't stopped a few view cues and other things from slipping out. We won't discuss that because that would be wrong, but I haven't been this excited for a land or an attraction in a long time.
Yeah, it looks amazing. Everybody, people who aren't even theme park fans, that are just Nintendo fans, are itching to go there and check it out. And the photos you're seeing here are some of the ones that Universal released. And like you said, they picked a few annual pass holders, got to go in, and they've been asked to hold off their photos and videos until the official opening. Like you said, a few have leaked out, and we may or may not be working on a story about some of those photos. But
we will not confirm or deny. Your computer may self-destruct.
We didn't take them. It looks amazing.
There's many things here that are going to be pushing the bar, from the augmented reality to the interactive armbands, to the meet and greet characters with animated faces. I got my passport ready. The bad thing is that Japan does not want people coming there from America anytime soon.
Right.
So
are the Olympics still happening?
Well, I think they're still penciled in, but they haven't written it on the calendar in ink yet.
I would say if they're having the Olympics, they're going to have to let visitors into this country. So maybe we'll get a chance.
We will see. We will see.
But it is coming to Orlando, but
Orlando eventually, and Hollywood yeah. much sooner.
Yeah, Hollywood will have. They have currently in the land in Japan. They have two rides. The Mario Kart ride and then a Yoshi ride, and we haven't seen anything of the Mario Kart ride except what you're seeing right there. The Yoshi ride is one of the things that did leak out, but it's kind of a what somebody called it, the people mover of Nintendo World.
Right,
just takes you around.
It's an old-fashioned kitty omni mover. It's perfectly family friendly, and it gives you amazing views of the whole land.
And we think in Hollywood they're only getting the Mario Kart ride, and we don't know how much of the interactive land they're actually going to get, so that'll probably be the smallest of the Nintendo worlds. And then it's also coming to Singapore and Orlando, but I don't think it's been announced for Beijing. Of course, Beijing's not even open yet, but
No word on Beijing yet.
And then one of the rumors, we don't know for sure, but that are the one that coming to Orlando will also include a Donkey Kong roller coaster or land at least. So we'll see if that actually comes to pass or not.
That was the plan when Epic Universe was a thing.
Yeah.
Now that everything is in flux, we have to see, you know, ultimately where it ends up.
Right.
And what shape it will take.
Yep.
That's Super Nintendo World might end land that has moved back and forth to more locations before being built than any other expansion.
This is just me talking, but I'd love to see them just make a whole theme park. It doesn't have to be Epic Universe, but a whole theme park of just video game rides and video games would be, that would be well received.
Well, I think that would be a good debate whether... you know, video games are a huge industry. I think they grossed more money than Hollywood did last year. So, does that mean that video games are cross-generational and have enough diverse appeal that you could build an entire theme park just around them? Or could it just be one element in a theme park?
Yeah.
Nintendo as a brand... probably has enough properties that could fill out a theme park, but is it smarter to put all your eggs in one basket or to spread those properties out among, you know, put Zelda in Lost Conan and put Pokemon in Kid Zone and then stick Mario over in Epic Universe or whatever eventually gets built. An exciting year for Nintendo fans, and I'm very jealous of all of them who get to go and see it in Japan while it's still fresh.
Yep.
So I think that is going to wrap up. I didn't think we would be able to talk for an hour without Brittany here, but we managed to do it. But before we finish, the very important thing we have to do is to thank our new club and VIP subscribers. As you know, we have three levels to our Attractions Magazine program. And if you join as a club or a VIP subscriber, you are in addition to other fabulous benefits, which Matt could tell you about if you'd like, you are going to get your name personally mentioned in the next episode of the show. So I just want, on behalf of the whole Attractions Magazine team, to say a big thank you to our newest supporters, Melissa Snyder, Tracy Perigo, and Eric Limogus. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
And Matt, why don't you also tell people, while you're at it, about the winter 2020/2021 issue, which is available on fine newsstands and mailboxes everywhere.
Yes, here we go. This is, as I mentioned a couple of times, Tokyo Disney, and they have a new Beauty and the Beast ride. And so we have a feature on that inside. And we have a story about And also fitting with the international, we have a top Skipper Ben's top 10 international Disney park attractions, the top 10 attractions he'd like, love to see come to Orlando. We have a story about high-flying balloon rides in Central Florida, and all our regular features and everything else. So you can buy this issue by itself on our website, and you can also subscribe, like Seth had mentioned, as a basic club or VIP member. And we'd love to have you join us.
Join us. All right, so we're going to say goodnight. On behalf of Brittany, you can find her at BRITTANITTLT. Oh, my gosh. She always says, it's spelled funny. Yes, because it's really long and it's really hard to say. All right, I'm going to try this again. I'm going to say goodnight now on behalf of Brittany, where you can find her at BRITTANITUTTLE on Twitter and Instagram. You can find me at S. Kuberski or at The UG Series on Twitter and Instagram and on theunofficialguides.com. And you can find Matt and the rest of Attractions at attractionsmagazine.com, at Attractions on Twitter, at Attractions Magazine on Instagram, and our YouTube channel at youtube.com/attractionsmagazine. Matt, that's did I miss it. Anything there?
Well, my personal ones, if you want to follow me personally, Matt Boom on Twitter and Attractions Matt on Instagram. But otherwise, that'll do it. And Brittany will be back next week. She's taking kind of a personal day today. So we miss her and can't wait to see her back next week.
Thank you all for joining us for the very first Attractions Podcast of 2021. It is already a better year than 2020. Have a great week, and we'll see you soon.
Bye.